my first client was a multinational. It was so amazing because I didn't realize that I could do it, but it really involved just taking stock of your skill set. I like doing a life SWOT and saying, okay, if I were a business entity, what are my skills? What are my weaknesses? What are my opportunities? And then that's how I attacked it then. And I think that's how I still continue to do it now.
I love the idea of a life SWOT. I've never heard of that before. And we always have to do this sort of SWOT analysis for business, but we never think about doing it for ourselves, right?
Exactly.
I'm going to do that.
Exactly. And you'd be amazed by what you discover when you do that for yourself.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Unconventionally. I am Gina Romero, and I'm so excited to invite to join us today, Nina Tirol. Nina and I have known each other since I first came back to the Philippines back in 2016, 2017. And we have been in each other's circles and in each other's networks. And of course, Nina is also a woman after my own heart. She is a huge advocate for women's empowerment as well. And although I've been seeing a lot of amazing things that Nina has been doing, one of the things that she has been doing recently caught my eye. And as you know, I know so many amazing women, but sometimes I just see this little thing and that someone is doing and I think, what is this? It piques my curiosity. So I've invited Nina here today to share a little bit about what she's been up to since we last connected and her new movement. Welcome, Nina.
Hi, Gina. It's so great to be here. And hello to everyone who's watching this. Thank you for joining us.
So Nina describes herself as a communicator, connector, change maker, and creative catalyst. And what I love even more than that description is how she describes her 20-year career. She describes it as an adventure into the worlds of marketing, advertising, journalism, nonprofit work, politics, entrepreneurship, teaching, and now building tech startups. You really have had a very extensive career. And can you tell us a little bit about sort of that 20-year journey in a sort of 2-minute intro so that we can get a feel for how you transitioned across all these different fields?
Oh, yeah. The interesting thing about it was that I've always seen myself as a communicator first. So writing was my first love and it was my first passion. But then I also got into theater in high school, was heavily into it. And even from college on the way to my career, I was always looking for a way to merge my loves of writing or being able to perform, like being able to be on stage and have an audience. So the communication sphere was perfect. And then I had gone through, you know, a lot of different sectors, a lot of different fields. And maybe the older generation might say, oh, you're such a millennial, you can't stay long enough in one job, or you like to jump. And I do like to jump. But it's also because I've always seen my career as like a tool belt, like an arsenal of things that I wanted to learn. And at each point in my career, it was, what do I want to learn next? What do I want to do next? What do I want to get exposed to next so that I can build that up in my arsenal? So it's been an amazing adventure, but at each point I was picking up a new skill. So yeah, working in, for example, government was an important skill that to have and, you know, to be able to practice throughout the rest of the journey, being able to innovate or get into some technology, teaching and, you know, building creative enterprises, doing nonprofit work. So at each step, there was always something new that I picked up. So my career is more like a tree with so many branches, but it's also a tree that's bore so much fruit. So I'm super happy about the past 20 years so far.
I really love how you described your career as sort of like a tool belt where you've collected skills along the way that each contribute to the next skill. Because I think a lot of the time people are afraid to try different things because, you know, first of all, you know, if you have that very diverse career, people can look at it like what you said and say, well, how come you keep jumping around different things, right? That's one thing. But then the other thing is, I find that a lot of people that I speak to who want to move into new space, they somehow don't realize how all the things that they learned before contribute. So an example of that is we have a lot of women who want to become freelancers, right? At Connected Women. they come from amazing careers with so much experience, but then when they come into freelancing, they'll call themselves a newbie. And they'll promote themselves or present themselves like a newbie. What is that all about?
You know, I think part of it is what they call the imposter syndrome. You're never fully sure of what you have or what you bring to the table. I mean, I've experienced that, and I still do sometimes. Like, I feel like a newbie in the tech space until my boss corrected me and said, "Hello, you've been doing this for a number of years now, and everyone's learning. So who's an expert, really?" But when I started freelancing, I did that when I was 23, and really out of necessity. So, my parents' incomes had collapsed at that point. I needed to really pick up the slack, and because I was, you know, the ate, the eldest. So, and I realized I had all these skills that my bosses were paying an agency for. I was like, wait a minute. I mean, if I could turn all of my skills into something like, you know, an agency of one, then maybe I would earn better. And that's how I did it. It was more like, okay, what skill sets do I have? How do I market myself as a consultant or as an agency? But again, they didn't have to know it was an agency of one. And I'd collaborate with different people to be able to put together a project team. And my first client was a multinational. It was so amazing because I didn't realize that I could do it. But it really involved just taking stock of your skill set. I like doing a life SWOT and saying, okay, if I were a business entity, what are my skills? What are my weaknesses? What are my opportunities? And then that's how I attacked it then. And I think that's how I still continue to do it now. You just need to be able to market yourself better. And of course, looking at your other skill sets, you would be a newbie in some areas, but you would also have expertise and some level of mastery in some other skills that people would find valuable and that they would pay for.
I love the idea of a life SWOT. I've never heard of that before. And we always have to do this sort of SWOT analysis for business, but we never think about doing it for ourselves, right?
Exactly.
I'm going to do that.
Exactly. And you'd be amazed by what you discover when you do that for yourself.
You should share that tool with me. Could you share something with me? And then I'll put it out to the community.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I think that would be super valuable.
Definitely.
So you had a very extensive career in comms. When we met, you were a corporate woman doing really, really well in your career. And you decided at that point, which I think, you know, you were still very much on the climbing to the peak of your career. So you were definitely not done yet in the corporate world. And then you decided to go and jump ship and start something out on your own. How was that, you know, that transition? I mean, did you feel you were ready, or was it just something that you thought, I'm never going to be ready, I'm just going to do it?
Yeah, you know what? I'm more of the latter. I think most of my decisions, for better or for worse, have always been, I just feel such a strong pull. I'll never be completely ready anyway. And I'm the type of person who learns by doing. So I make a lot of mistakes in the process, you know. So I'm more of a kinesthetic learner. I have to jump into it and do it. And then I adjust and learn along the way. So that's what it was like. But it was also coming at the point in my career where by that time, I had already been in comms for about 18 years.
Wow.
And it was, you know, it was a really good job. It was probably a dream job at the time. I was heading corporate affairs for the largest advertising agency in the country, really nice office, you know, so that kind of thing. But I was also asking myself, okay, I've done this much as a communicator. Am I always just going to be a mouthpiece or an advocate for somebody? And it's not a bad thing. I still do advocate and I still do champion and I still am a mouthpiece. But a part of me was yearning to be part of the action. It's like, I want to build solutions. I don't want, and I, you know, at some practical level, I was thinking, I didn't want to be a cost center. I wanted to be in the profit center. Because when you're in comms, in the corporate world, you're always the cost center. But you're not bringing in any money, but you know, you're the one spending the money on branding, on advertising. So I was like, you know, what's it like being in the profit center and helping the company make money? And I realized you only do that if you're part of building the solutions that or the services that companies provide. So I decided to strike out on my own. And then my business partner and I formed a training and consultancy firm around innovation and helping companies innovate, because I really, really, really wanted to be in that space. The other backstory there was that I had applied for a scholarship, a government scholarship to the UK on innovation. I'd got it into the schools that I wanted. I just needed the scholarship. And unfortunately, I was waitlisted. And I think because I was too honest, let's save that for another conversation, but I was waitlisted. They were like, you know, we really, really like you, but we're going to, you know, you're not going to get the spot. But if somebody else backs up, you're next. And I said, okay, that's a no. So I said, you know what? I know the curriculum. I know what I want to study. I'm going to DIY my master's degree. And part of building the business, and one of your guests, a really good friend of mine, Camille Escudero, she also told me, are you really going to want to move away to another country and study and read books and be in a classroom for 1 or 2 years? Or shouldn't you just innovate? If you're studying innovation, just go ahead and innovate already.
Perfect advice. I love it.
Right? So yeah, and she's so wise. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to do it. So that company, Kickfire Kitchen, was born out of the desire to innovate and practice it on myself. Practice it on myself, innovate my career, innovate myself, and then innovate with clients. And, you know, it's led to really amazing work. We've done work with one of the highest end luxury hotels in the world. We were very fortunate with that project. We've done it in countries like Brunei and Vietnam. We've also done it, of course, with many conglomerates and small and medium and then nonprofits in the Philippines. So it was a really good time. But just after that, also, I really wanted to dive more into, you know, let's start building. So from that space, I actually transitioned into my work now in technology startups, because I said, okay, I want to do less consulting. I want to do more building, more skin in the game, and really help build solutions from the ground up.
So and the startup space is very, very different to anything, right? Oh, it's a real interesting space.
It's amazing. It's an amazing roller coaster. But, you know, going into it, I have told myself, and I've also told people around me, I mean, there's this mantra in the startup world, you know, always in beta, like you're always a work in progress. You're never the complete finished product. And that's been my life so far. I embarked on like a major life transformation around 7 years ago by now. And from that point onwards, I told myself, my life is an active experiment. I'm going to experiment on myself. I'm not going to take myself too seriously. I'm going to also actively reflect and process the learning as I go along, because that's what you do when you're experimenting, right? You're also taking note of your observations, your findings, your recommendations, and I'll always be iterating. I mean, the version of me you first met, Gina, a few years ago is so different from that version of me now. And for me, it's a good thing. And the Nina you'll probably meet in a year or two will also be different. But at my core, I'm always a curious person who just loves to explore. So for me, life is always going to be a fun adventure because there's so much to explore anyway.
We're very similar, actually. Like a lot of the things that you've mentioned, I resonate with so much. And I'm sure there are listeners who are resonating with that as well. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there are some who are like, I wish I could be like that. Like they're kind of, you know how you can get stuck? And this has happened to me before in my life, and you too, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But where you just feel that you're too afraid to step out and do these adventurous things, right? How have you, I know how I've done it, but how have you managed to break out from those times when you're all adventured out? Like you're just like, I just want to stay in my cave and not do anything.
Well, that was me last year, to be honest. For a lot of last year, I think for a lot of us, last year was that, hang on, there's too much change already around us. Let me just hunker down. Let me just be in my cave, as you also pointed out. Let me be in my cave for now and just conserve my energy, because there's so much to deal with. So it does happen. But when I first had, I had to go through a major life crisis. So I will not recommend life crises to anyone, but of course they happen, right? So sometimes when younger women say, how to be you po? Oh, no, please do not be like me. Maybe learn my lessons, but I would not wish my crises on anybody else. But you know, it's happened where there've been crises. You go into a really, really deep, dark place. And to be quite honest, what's helped me, well, therapy was one, but also really confronting the ugly sides of me, maybe, that needed a lot of work. So that needs a lot of reflection. So I had to really step back, do the life SWOT and many other tools and other reflection tools and say, hey, how did I get to this place? Maybe other people had something to do with it, but I had a lot to do with how I got to this place. So it took a lot of like untangling and also finding out, okay, what's the version of me that's not so great, that needs fixing, or, you know, that needs evolution. And I've had to constantly work on those sides of me, you know, the side of me that was such a people pleaser, I could never say no. And I still have difficulty saying no. Or the side of me that there's a side of me that gets too excited about so many things. So I end up taking on so many things, too much on my plate, and I'm just so maxed out. And then I end up resenting myself and everybody else in the process. So there are versions of that in all of us. And we just have to be aware of, okay, where are these little monsters in me hiding? How do I train myself to set healthier boundaries, maybe, or work towards a healthier version of myself where I don't have to please people all the time? Or maybe I just work on taking care of some people I care about, but I don't have to take care of the world seriously, right? I have to take care of myself first. But those things had to happen for me to get to this point where, you know what, I'm in a more comfortable space. Let me now try something new. So I had to first kind of address the broken pieces before I could fully be confident and say, let's try something new and let's be okay. Let's meaning me and myself, like the outer me and the inner me. It's like, okay, let's be comfortable with failing and turning our life into an experiment and just making fun of ourselves if we make a mistake, because, hey, we've gone through worse. Right. Yeah. When you've gone through the lowest you can possibly go, everything after that is a bonus. Another line I would tell myself every so often is, you know, expect nothing, be grateful for everything. Once you get to that point where, wow, everything is such a gift, everything is amazing, and you're grateful for so many things, then you can you begin to be a bit more comfortable about, you know what if I try this? But what if it fails? Okay, if it fails, then, you know, I learn something, then I try something new. But it takes so much self-work.
You know what? I think there's a lot of awareness happening right now about self-care, right? There's a little bit of a mini movement around it, or not a mini movement, a huge movement building around this. Because I think last year definitely added some fuel to that, because we all went through so much together. I mean, collectively as a planet, right? We went through so much. And so I think that just being part of something so significant and such a huge disruption in all of our lives put a lot of things into perspective. And I'm really glad that you're sharing about these things as well, because I find that a lot of the time, you know, we look up to people who have built this success very seemingly, you know, without any struggle. Or sometimes we talk about the struggles that happened then that then led to the eventual success. But people don't often realize that these struggles are part of the cycle of life, right? They crop up and then they die down again, and we handle them as they come up. It's not like, oh, I'm there now. I'm over that difficult past and now my life is smooth and I'm on the up.
I mean, the difficulties are part of the daily grind. Right? Like there's something every week, and there's just some weeks when you're like, I'm just not 100%. Or sometimes there will be months when you're just not 100%. I can't focus right now. It really does happen, and it will continue to happen. But what I've learned is that It's how you deal with the difficulties. The difficulties will come, and some difficulties will be larger than others. I mean, just as a case in point, I have an aging and ailing mother, and last year she got COVID. And at a certain point, I'm like, okay, she's not going to be there forever. And I know it's going to devastate me, you know, the day she's no longer there. But you also, I think, you grow your resilience muscles with each difficulty that happens and with the knowledge that, okay, I can survive this. And then with more self-awareness, you realize that when the larger adversities do come, you'll probably be in a better place to handle them. So it's not that the challenges get easier, but your muscles just got stronger and you're now able to jump higher, right? Or run stronger, or, you know, lift the burdens in a more graceful way.
It makes so much sense. And the work that you're doing right now with startups, because startups is really notorious, the startup space is very notorious for being hard. Like, really, I mean, business is hard, entrepreneurship is hard, building a career, life is hard, but the startup space is brutal sometimes.
How
do you bring some of this wisdom? Like, is this part of you call yourself a venture builder because you're part of an organization now called Talino, right? Tell us a little bit about the types of organizations that you work with, the founders, or how does it work? They're not really founders, right? You kind of like build startups within your own organization, and then how does that work? Do you put founders in? How do you select these people?
That's a really good question. So yeah, in Talino, so it's called a venture studio, and I'd encourage anyone who's into startups to look that up, what a venture studio is. But basically taking the Hollywood model of, you know, like you have a Disney, you have a Marvel, you have all these different studios putting together movies using maybe a tried and tested formula. So in startups, it's something similar where there are no tried and tested formulas, but when you're in a venture studio, so you build startups from the ground up, meaning everything from the business concept to the team, to the investment, to the technology, to the branding, et cetera, is built in-house. But to your question of how hiring goes, there are people we hire in the team, and we do have vacancies. Shameless plug, please check out Talino Venture Labs on LinkedIn. We do hire experts on, you know, the likes of product design, UX, UI, of course, you know, the developers, marketing, et cetera. So we do hire experts who can translate their expertise onto different startups. So for example, we have food tech startups, we have fintech startups, we have insurtech. So different skill sets can contribute to the growth of these startups. But we also hire what we call entrepreneurs in residence, where they're like the co-founders of the startup. So they're part of the team full-time, technically. So you're part of the team, but your role is to act as a co-founder and to help build that business to such a state where you can now pitch to investors and you're actually making money, et cetera. So my job in Talino is a combination. I was initially hired to be chief marketing officer for Talino itself and for the different startups. So putting together all my various backgrounds. But I was also recently asked to be an entrepreneur in residence, which was amazing because I didn't know I had it in me. So I thank my boss for spotting that. And I've been leading the food vertical. So we have some food tech startups in the Middle East, and then here, and then building one in the US, where you have to be the one to identify the opportunities and the partnerships and then learn how to fundraise. So that's exactly what it is. It's an entrepreneur in residence. It's like you're a co-founder in train. I mean, you're being trained for it, but you're actually doing it already until such point where you're able to mature the startup enough, and you know, maybe you're able to take on outside investors, or you're able to hire other people and grow outside of the original Talino team.
So it's a really interesting model. Really interesting
model. Yep.
I'm going to check that out. some more and try and get my head around this model, because it really does sound interesting. Mm-hmm. And what a great opportunity for you, because you get to be in a company, but then you also get to run companies.
It's
interesting way to do it.
Definitely. And it's been a massive stretch, I guess, in terms of, you know, I talked about muscles earlier, like it built muscles in me I didn't know I had. So it strengthened some muscles, but there were some muscles that were awakened. It's like, oh, I didn't realize I like this. Like, I didn't realize that I like getting in front of investors and pitching.
Wow. Right? Nobody likes that. What's wrong with you?
I know. And I realized, wow, I really enjoy it. Like, I love pitch decks.
It makes sense, though, because of your background, right? You talked about loving the theater. You talked about loving the stage. And so it all came together.
Yeah, but I also had a massive fear of numbers up until this time. Mm. But now at this point, I actually appreciate the numbers. And I'm training myself to be more numeric or more data-driven. And it kind of makes me feel smarter. After having, you know, line of sevens in math in high school and doing really bad at algebra and trigonometry, it's like, hey, now I can understand better. So
I think it depends on the context, right? Because yeah, I have the same problem. I'm terrible at maths in general, but then if the numbers are reflective, like if I'm looking at numbers for insights, like what does this mean to my business? I'm so sharp with the numbers. Yes, I'm like, hang on, what happened here? So because it means the numbers actually mean something. I think it's part of that learning by doing that you talked about earlier, right?
Yeah, exactly. And just
the very practical way.
And you know what? One thing I need to mention, that there are times when you're afraid to be able to do something because you don't know how or you don't know where to start. This is where the power of partnerships and collaborations come in. I mean, and I learned this so much along the way, but also more now, especially in Talino, you will never be the expert at everything. But if you work with other people who have different or complementary skill sets, then you'll feel more confident and you also learn from them and they learn from you. So I've also become sharper because of the people I've worked with. And when I don't know something, I really ask them, hey guys, this might seem like a beginner question, but what does this mean? And they're like, oh no, it's fine. Here, you know, let me show you how that works. And just the process of asking and collaborating and learning from other people just has made me also more confident about my own skills. It's super important.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that, because I think sometimes people think that asking questions makes them look stupid, right? Yeah. I mean, it's a thing that you get from school and you carry it through life and you're kind of like, yeah, I don't want to ask this question because it's probably a super obvious thing and it's just going to make me look really inexperienced. But actually, that curiosity, asking questions and, you know, and then being able to apply that, I think, is something that a lot of people would value, actually. They wouldn't find it, you know, they wouldn't look at you and say, well, why is she asking so many questions? Mm-hmm. So that's such a good point.
Or sometimes in a Zoom meeting when they're talking about terms I don't understand, so you're Googling already, okay, what does this term mean? Right? Just so you can understand the full content better.
Yeah, always Google if you can Google. And if you can't Google it, then ask the question.
Exactly.
So this leads perfectly into the bit that I'm most excited about talking about, which is your new movement, and it's Girl Make the First Move.
Yeah,
I saw that and I was like, oh, what is this? What is this she's doing? Because it's such an interesting, catchy, can't look away sort of name. So tell me about how this was born and where you're going with this amazing idea.
Mm-hmm. So at its core, Girl Make the First Move is a provocation, right? It's a statement. It was deliberately framed that way because exactly your reaction, Gina, when people see it, I wanted to say, okay, hang on, it's speaking to me, it's strong enough, but it's also asking you to think about what could you make the first move on? There were several factors that led up to this, but one thing I realized when you Google Girl Make the First Move, and I mean, this was before I coined the term, all the searches lead to women and dating. And it's like, how to make the first move in dating. And I'm like, seriously, is that the only thing we can make first moves on? And this was also called from life experiences where sometimes life pushes you to make a first move or to make any move, or else, you know, it's sink or swim. But there are times and many times in our lives when we feel so compelled to do something, but again, there's always something holding us back. So Girl Make the First Move aims to be an online community and a platform and a space, and really a movement where we can encourage, inspire, and empower women and girls of all ages, whether you're just 7 years old and, you know, you just want to try things in this, you know, big world you're in, or you're 70 and you feel like, you know what, I'm not done yet here. There's still something new I can do. This is really for you. We just started last week, actually, with a Clubhouse chat. And it was amazing because I was grateful to have been able to curate a panel of six women, and then plus me, from all around the globe. You know, from like someone born in India but working in Singapore, someone from the US but now in Paris, you know, Latina who's working in the US State Senate, a colleague of mine who is Filipino, born in Saudi but running a business in Bahrain. So, Filipina, Chinese in Canada. So all of these different backgrounds, it's like the question I asked them was, you know, what has stopped you from making first moves? But if there's a first move you could make, what would that be? And the answers were just amazing. I mean, there's women from everywhere wanting to make a first move on so many things, and whether it's, you know, taking better care of themselves, so self-care, or moving forward in their careers, right? Or there were women who reached out to me and they were like, you need to make first moves in breaking away from an abusive relationship or toxicity, or there's so many things, or handling money. So there are many, many, many first moves we can make, but often we don't know where to start. We don't know where to look. I've also done like little FGDs with, you know, younger women in their, you know, college. And they said, we want to just learn and connect with other women who may not necessarily be up there yet. You know, they're not yet the Sheryl Sandbergs or the Sarah Blakeleys of the world, but they're women they'll be able to relate to, and someone who can show them that, hey, it is possible to make first moves. And then the goal is also to be able to connect you later on with experts, you know, psychologists, financial planners, people who can talk to us about negotiating. You know, how do you make the first move in talking to your boss about the salary raise, right? Or a promotion. So there are many first moves, but there were a couple of takeaways, yeah, from that chat we had last week was that, one, so many of the women also said that it's not about the big moves. It can be about the micro moves you make. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's about saying, you know what, I'm going to say no to more things so I can say yes to the right things. Or sometimes it's, yeah, I'm going to cut myself off from toxic relationships around me and focus on what's healthy for me. So, I mean, they can be big moves, but some can be micro, right? There were also men in the audience, and I was so grateful that there were actually men who realized that, hey, we seem to be part of the problem here. And that's the kind of conversation I want to spark, that, or maybe you're not part of the problem, but you can be part of the solution. And there were men saying, okay, if this has been going on, if this is how you guys, you know, how you ladies feel about it, what can we do to help? And that to me was such a magical moment in the conversation, right? So it really aims to be a platform for storytelling, for conversation, for information. And it's still a baby right now. We have an Instagram page, Facebook, and LinkedIn. But pretty soon we're going to be doing podcasts, just like what we're doing now. Pretty soon, and a blog or a website and other information. But we do want to be able to connect women and girls from all over the world, just so that you know you're not alone. And there are stories and examples you can look up to, and then eventually resources to help you get there.
Sounds like you're off to an amazing start. And I think there's just one thing that, well, you're preaching to the converted here, obviously, yeah. But for those who are listening, I realized something recently, that the women's empowerment space, because I've been in it for so long, like probably, you know, over 15 years now, mm-hmm. similar probably to you, or maybe even longer. And I kind of fell into women's empowerment by accident. It wasn't something that I had set out to do in my mm-hmm. life. I just ended up in a women's network in the UK, which was such a big influence on me. My mentor was a strong women's empowerment advocate, and I learned so much from her. But I realized that there's still a lot of people that don't understand why it's even still a thing, right? They're kind of like, That's true. Isn't stuff already kind of equal already? Mm-hmm. It's 2021 mm-hmm. and women have been fighting for their rights for decades, centuries, actually.
Yes, that's
true. So where does this fit in? I mean, where are we still finding the gaps? Why don't women make the first move in from the conversations and your observations?
Mm-hmm. That is a really good question. I asked myself the very same thing. It's like, we're supposed to be empowered already, but why does it still resonate? So I think on the macro level, there are still spaces where we need to open the doors a bit wider for women to come in. So I'm seeing that in the tech space where a very, very small percentage of funding goes to women-led startups. So in the tech space, in the VC space, that's still a concern that you do need to have more women-led technology startups or technology founders out there. In the panel I hosted last week in Clubhouse, one gentleman asked, he works in the security space, like security, bodyguards and etc. And he's like, when you think of that space, you think of big burly white men, right? But he also realized, hang on, women can be in the security space and they can have flourishing careers in there. Of course, there are physical risks and women being the primary caretakers or nurturers at home kind of makes it more challenging. But he's like, we can actually, there shouldn't be anything stopping us from letting more women in. So there are spaces in the chat we had, they identified areas like, oil and gas companies, so the energy space, like I said, security. There's still certain sectors, maybe construction, engineering, etc. There's still some sectors that are heavily male dominated. We're not looking to flip it around and say, no, there should be more women. It's just that more women should feel like they can. So if
that's such an important distinction, right? Actually, because right. There's probably a lot of women saying, well, I don't want to be in security or construction. But if you did want to, exactly. You should be able to, right?
Yeah, like there are now more women pilots, right? They used to be just flight attendants. And Gina, you and I know this from our family backgrounds, right? Mm-hmm. But now there are women pilots. There are now all female crew, women astronauts. Or if you're watching this and you're just in high school or just in college, and if you tell your parents, I want to be an engineer or civil engineer, mechanical engineer, you shouldn't have to face, or maybe you still might, but you should be able to face with more confidence, comments like, but you're a girl, and it should be, so what, right?
Yeah. Those comments shouldn't even happen anymore, right? In an ideal world.
No, but they still does. Do. Yeah. They still do. So it's really just meant to boost our confidence that here are other women who've done it. There are women in NASA. There are Filipino women in NASA. I mean, speaking to the Filipinos in the audience, right? So you can. And you shouldn't force yourself, especially in those younger years, you shouldn't force yourself to just think of, no, maybe I'll just take up these courses which are more feminine, because you should be able to take up anything you want. Yeah. And then be really good at it if that's what you really want to do.
It's so hopeful for the younger ones now, right? Because I think finally things are starting to move a little bit. There's just so much opportunity. And, I'm a huge passionate advocate for technology. And I think that technology opens so many doors. It makes it easier to access opportunities that were never available to us before. So, leverage on what you have and just go for it. And you mentioned, my community has a huge Filipino following because I'm based here in Manila and a lot of our activities are here in the Philippines. Is there anything in particular that you find is very specific to Filipino culture of the women's inability to take ownership of their lives or take that first move?
You know, What I also learned from the panel I hosted, I think it's more of an Asian thing, or you know what, it might still be universal, really. When you're raised as a young girl and you're told that, you know, oh, you know, you should be a little bit more prim and proper, or you should be a little bit more quiet, or, you know, girls are meant to be seen, not heard. And it still happens. Not saying it happens in all households. I'm very fortunate to have been raised by a really fierce, like, tiger mama. I mean, my mom's super fierce, and I got a lot of my, I guess, that fire and that fierceness from her. But so many of us, especially in more traditional households, are really made to feel like the girl's place is in the kitchen, or you're not supposed to dominate over your elder brother. Like, you know, he should have the stage and he should have the awards, and don't be too smart. Because,
oh my gosh, yes.
Right? Don't be too smart. You're going to steal his thunder. And that's happened, and it still happens to this day. So I think this is really a message that, you know, we don't mean to disrespect traditions and cultures, because we value those traditions and cultures. But it's really just making space for the younger ladies and the young girls, especially, to say, you know what, if you're really good at math and you want to be an engineer, or you want to study the stars, there are women who've come before you who've been able to do it, and you should be able to do it as well.
I love it. It's just such an important movement even until today. And I think that the conversations, the stories that you mentioned, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, we need to hear it from more women. That's mm-hmm. how we realize it's not just us. Actually, to answer my own question about whether it's very specific to Philippines, I think there are some, in my observation, being a Filipina, mm-hmm. British, mm-hmm. spent a lot of my time outside of the Philippines and came back, a lot of these things are very much universal. And yeah. That's why I think having these global conversations is so important, because when you're in the Philippines and you're surrounded by the Filipino culture, or whichever culture you come from, you tend to think that this is a problem that's isolated to your own culture.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And then you meet other Asians and you're like, oh, other Asians do this too. And then you meet people from the complete other side of the world, mm-hmm. From completely different cultures. And you're like, they do this as well. They mm-hmm. may be expressing it in a different way, or they may present themselves in a different way. But when you dig a little bit deeper and you start talking about the challenges, there's so much similarity from women across all backgrounds, across all cultures, all ages. And then mm-hmm. you're like, wow, we're basically all going through the same thing. We just didn't realize it.
That's true. And I just think, I know we don't have much time yet, but left, but I do need to mention that I also would like for this space to be one where it's positive. And I do believe that there could also be such a thing as toxic feminism. Like, there's such a thing as toxic masculinity, right? So I would never advocate for hostility towards men. That's not the point. It's really about women in themselves taking initiative. It's not about saying we're better, right? We're better, we can do this better. It's not that. Because to be very honest, many of my own milestones, so much of my empowerment actually came from male mentors and male bosses who, they were the ones who plucked me out and said, you know what, I think you can do this. I'm like, no, I'm not ready. No. They're like, no, you're ready. Go push me into the water, to sink or swim. And I swam and I floated, and maybe I enjoyed myself. So I really give credit also to a lot of the men around me who have been, I guess, secure enough to not close the door or to not hold something to that glass ceiling, or who didn't perpetuate that glass ceiling in the first place. They lifted the lid off the ceiling. So I think there's a role to be played in making the conversation, you know, open to everybody. So it's about women taking initiative upon themselves, right, in their own lives. But it's also about everybody else supporting that and creating a space that's safe for girls and women to thrive. So I really salute the men around me, who've also contributed to the kind of woman that I am today.
That's such an important distinction. And I'm really glad that you raised that up, because there is this perception sometimes that women's empowerment is held back by men, and it's something that women need to solve for women. And you know, this is everybody's job to make sure that actually not even women's empowerment, you know, even looking at the broader classification of gender equality, right?
Exactly.
And then looking even broader and saying, just to create a more equitable world, right? A
exactly.
world that is fair, that everyone has access to what they need. Because if women were in the lead and men were dropping behind, then the same people who stand for women's empowerment should step up and push for gender equality for all genders. So
yeah, for all. Exactly.
Yeah. And that's a question that I get asked a lot. Like, why are you focusing on women? Don't you care about, you know, everybody else? And it's like, no, because when you empower women, it really does lift up everyone. And that's where we have to start. So I love it. I love it. Oh my gosh. I could really talk to you about this for hours on end, and I'm sure you are the same. It's a topic that we're both super passionate about, but I'm so excited for this. I mean, you've always been doing amazing, interesting things. I'm always kind of following you and seeing, but this one I think has so much potential to explode because the message is so strong. So how can a couple of last things as we wrap up, how can the ladies listening, what's like a practical tip for them to be more conscious of making the first move? Is there anything that they can watch out for in themselves so that they can be more proactive?
Oh yeah, definitely. When your inner critic tells you, no, you can't, you're too fat, too short, too old, too dark, too whatever, or whatever your inner critic says, challenge that inner critic and say, but what if I can? What if? I mean, for the Filipinas, what if lang, diba? Try lang natin. Then just push yourself a little bit more. And then just take a baby step. Just try it out. And then as you get comfortable, you're going to see that, you know, if you really can do this, things will just open up for you and you will not be sorry. But if it was, let's say it didn't work out so well, then now you know, and you can shift direction and say, okay, wasn't this door, I'll try this other door. I'll try this other path. But just keep on making the first step. And then Oprah also says, it's also about making the right next step. So once you've made the first step, then the next, one foot in front of the other, before you know it, you've done amazing stuff and you only have yourself to thank for it.
I love it. And you mentioned this amazing clubhouse that you held last week. Can that still be accessed, or do we need to wait for whatever is coming up next? Bearing in mind that people are watching or listening at different times.
I know, exactly. So yeah, clubhouse, unfortunately, it's really a closed space. No recording or transcribing is allowed. So what I'll be doing is I'll be creating a series of podcasts as well. And that's why I'm so excited to soon have Gina there. But we will create a series of podcasts that will be able to, that will be accessible on Facebook, on YouTube, et cetera. So it's really meant to be for everybody. So we'll make sure that the spaces for those conversations can be accessed at, you know, at any point by anyone.
Fantastic. And for now, we will follow you on Instagram, Facebook, and anywhere else.
LinkedIn. Yeah.
And LinkedIn.
Yep. And it's just, girl, make the first move. I'm so glad that that line was not taken yet by anybody else.
It's amazing. Thank you so much, Ninya. I have loved catching up with you. Well overdue. We must keep in touch more and see how we can help each other and collaborate more, especially on your amazing movement. And for those listening, thank you so much for joining. It has been a while since I've been back. That's a story for another day, but you can look forward to more Unconventionally stories coming up soon. We're halfway through the year now. Can you believe it? Halfway through 2021. So let's make it counts and make the rest of the year awesome. So keep following us, keep inspiring each other, and we will see you again soon.